Okay, so let's unpack this. Welcome everyone to the Deep Dive.
Glad to be here.
Today we are diving into a really focused set of source material. We're looking at specific excerpts titled Urban Seller Strategies, Strategies for Independent Sellers in Urban Environments.
Yeah, that's a title that, it immediately tells you what you're getting into. We're not talking about broad, high-level management theory.
Not at all.
This feels much more like a technical manual. It's about survival and growth, but at the most competitive level of commerce imaginable.
Exactly. Our mission today is a true deep dive. We're going to try and extract the core actionable knowledge from these sources. Because if you're an independent seller and you're operating in a dense, demanding city,
You need an edge.
you need an edge, you need a shortcut. And the promise here, I think, is a set of strategies that are specifically tailored to help you thrive where the rent is sky high and, well, the competition is everywhere.
And that tailoring, that differentiation, that's everything. We're looking for the specialized tactics, the ones that leverage an independent seller's agility and speed, not just their, financial power.
Which they probably don't have.
Which they don't have. The constraints of a city, they demand creativity.
So let's start where the source does. Let's define the main character of this story, the independent seller. What does that term immediately imply to you when you think about strategy?
Well, what's fascinating is that the term independent seller right away sets the boundaries and I think the potential of the strategy.
Okay.
We're talking about individuals or maybe very small teams that by definition lack massive centralized capital. They don't have, say, huge legal departments or standardized playbooks they can roll out to 500 locations.
Right. They're resource scarce almost by definition.
Yeah.
But that scarcity, it isn't just about cash flow, right? It's about human capital. It's about storage space, logistical infrastructure. If you're running a, I don't know, a super successful gourmet food stall in Portland, you probably store your inventory in a rented locker or maybe even your own kitchen. Your whole strategy can't possibly rely on a global supply chain.
Precisely. The strategies we'd expect to find in the source have to be built around maximizing the few things the independent seller does have.
Which are?
Unparalleled flexibility, the ability to pivot and pivot rapidly, and this deep, often hyper-local personal knowledge of their customer base. A big chain takes, what, 6 months to pilot a new product line?
At least.
An independent seller can test it on a Monday and scrap it by Wednesday if it's not working. That speed is a weapon.
But doesn't that independence also come with a huge, a huge burden? The regulatory side, the administrative stuff?
Oh, absolutely.
If you're a massive chain, you have whole compliance departments just dedicated to navigating complex city permits for, say, a sign or a street vending license. If you're independent, you're spending half your week trying to figure out which city office to call. That's a strategic challenge in itself.
It's a massive liability. And that raises a really crucial point. Any effective urban seller strategy has to include tactics for, let's call it, regulatory arbitrage, or at least simplification.
So, ways to cut through the red tape.
Methods for minimizing that administrative friction that's just inherent in these high-density areas. The successful independent seller has to treat compliance not as a static rule book, but as a dynamic hurdle that needs constant strategic attention.
I think the most important differentiator, though, has to go back to the human connection. The big box store has standardization. The independent seller has personality.
Yes.
Their reputation is tied directly to the face behind the counter. That local reputation is probably their most valuable non-monetary asset.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So applying these strategies, it starts with understanding the why of independence. It's not just about surviving, it's about leveraging that agility, that personal touch, to carve out a loyal niche.
Right.
Their success isn't measured in market share percentages. It's measured in repeated high-margin sales with local customers who actively choose the independent option over the more convenient corporate one.
And that leads us perfectly into the other half of the title, the urban environment itself. This isn't just selling in any town, it's selling in a high-stakes, high-density landscape that's just defined by extreme friction.
The urban setting is a true paradox, as you infer from the title. On the surface, it's a gold mine.
Of course, millions of people.
Unparalleled density, constant foot traffic, diverse demographics. But every single one of those resources is contested. Rental costs punish any inefficiency, and the competition isn't just the shop next door.
No.
It's the e-commerce giant delivering in 2 hours, and it's the food truck 2 blocks over that just introduced some viral new menu item.
The competition for just visibility, for attention, is punishing. Think about a standard shopping street. In a suburban strip mall, you've got these wide storefronts, big parking lots that act as visible boundaries.
Yeah, you can see everything.
In downtown Toronto or Seattle, you might be operating out of a 150-square-foot micro-retail space stacked vertically next to a dozen other shops.
And that single detail dictates the strategy. The absolute need to maximize small space. Traditional retail strategies are, frankly, useless here.
So what does the source need to contain then?
It must contain strategies for things like vertical merchandising, how to draw the customer's eye upwards, and also maximizing the efficiency of what we call the last 50 feet. That final approach a customer takes to your business.
So if the source material is going to be effective, it has to define strategies that overcome these specific urban hurdles. I'd imagine one of the primary ones is just speed, operational velocity.
Yes, that's a great term for it.
When foot traffic is high, you have to optimize for transaction speed. Otherwise, you create a bottleneck and customers will just, they'll walk away. They'll go to the faster, even if less specialized option.
That's a fantastic connection. The urban environment demands that you capitalize on those fleeting moments. If a buyer is on their lunch break, they are timing you.
Literally watching the clock.
This is where that concept of operational velocity really comes into play. Strategies focused on rapid inventory rotation and totally frictionless payment processing.
And crucially, the strategies also have to address that regulatory complexity we mentioned. If you're running a mobile unit, like a cart or a pop-up, the rules can shift wildly from one city block to the next.
Wildly. It can depend on who owns the patch of sidewalk you're on.
Right.
So the strategies have to treat density not just as a challenge, but as a resource. How do you turn that high concentration of people into immediate concentrated demand? And this is where we move into the actual tactics.
The payoff.
The payoff the listener is looking for. The tailored strategies themselves.
Okay, let's get specific. We've established the independent seller and the urban environment. If you had to guess, what are the two or three most potent strategy categories the source must be focusing on to make success repeatable?
Based on the constraints we've outlined, so limited space, limited capital, high competition, I believe the source material must break down strategies into three major distinct pillars.
Okay, let's hear them. Hit us with pillar one.
Pillar one would have to be micro-specialization and depth of niche.
Micro-specialization.
Right. Since the independent seller can't compete on price or scale, they have to compete on the depth of their offering. The strategy here isn't just about selling, say, specialty coffee.
It's more than that.
It's about selling single-origin, ethically sourced beans roasted precisely for cold brew aficionados who live within a 10-block radius.
That shift from specialization to micro-specialization feels key. It's about becoming the undisputed expert in an extremely small category, which then makes you a mandatory stop for a small but very loyal group of consumers.
You're using the density of the city to aggregate that small group of enthusiasts. That's the trick. If you open a generalized bookstore in a major urban area, you probably fail. But if you open a store that specializes only in 19th century French philosophy texts and you host weekly author chats,
then you might have something.
You tap into a niche that can sustain you, but only if the strategy is executed perfectly. It turns that high-cost rent into a necessary investment for being close to your target demographic.
What's a real-world example of this? I'm thinking about independent sellers in, like, New York's Chelsea market. They're not selling general stuff.
Not at all.
They're selling $10 artisanal cookies or very specific handcrafted leather goods. They maximize the dollar value per square foot because their niche justifies that higher price point.
And it connects back to the experience, too. The strategy must teach the seller how to leverage that niche to create an event out of the transaction. You're not just selling a product, you're offering an education or curated experience that just cannot be replicated at the mass market level.
All right, that's powerful. Let's move to pillar two. If micro-specialization deals with what you sell, what does the next pillar address?
Pillar two is operational velocity and micro-logistics. This gets at the need to operate lean and fast. We talked about transaction speed, but it goes a lot deeper. It's about inventory management.
Okay.
The strategy has to tackle the core issue of limited storage space and the demands of high turnover.
So this is where ideas like micro-fulfillment come in. You can't afford a huge back room, let alone a warehouse.
Absolutely. The strategy has to advise the seller on setting up a distribution model where inventory is either immediately sold or it's constantly in motion.
What would that look like?
It might involve partnerships with small, hyper-local storage facilities, or designing the retail space itself to act as the primary fulfillment center. Some people call it retail as fulfillment.
That's a huge difference from traditional retail.
Yeah.
You're basically taking lean manufacturing principles and applying them to a storefront.
That's a perfect way to put it.
For instance, if you sell customized t-shirts, you don't stock 500 finished shirts. You stock blank material in the equipment, and you fulfill the orders on demand. That minimizes your expensive shelf space.
And operational velocity also applies to staffing. The strategy must detail how to use flexible staffing models, maybe leveraging local freelancers or shared service platforms, to meet peak hour demand without committing to high fixed labor costs during the slow periods.
This also has to include technological velocity, right?
Mm-hmm.
The strategies must advise against those clunky, slow point-of-sale systems.
Well, for sure.
And push for mobile, cloud-based systems that eliminate friction and process payments almost instantly. Time is literally money on that counter in a dense urban setting.
Every single second counts. These strategies prioritize efficiency, sometimes even over comfort.
Okay, so we have micro-specialization and operational velocity. What is the final essential pillar for urban selling success?
Pillar 3, hyper-local digital integration. Since every independent seller is fighting for physical visibility, the strategy must show them how to use digital tools to dominate their specific geographical bubble.
And we're talking a small bubble.
Often a radius of just a few blocks.
This is where we go beyond just, you know, have a website and get into the real technical weeds. How does an independent seller actually integrate digitally on a hyperlocal scale?
The most critical tool here is probably geofencing implementation. The strategy must teach sellers how to use mobile advertising and social media to target potential customers the moment they physically step into, say, the 3-block radius around their shop.
It's about pulling people off the sidewalk.
It's about pulling people off the sidewalk, exactly. It's incredibly specific and actionable. Instead of wasting money on national ads, you spend a very focused budget targeting the 5,000 people who walk past your shop every hour.
And it must require leveraging local data, too.
Of course. The strategy would advise tapping into neighborhood-specific social networks, community apps, and hyper-local review sites. The digital presence of the independent seller should be less about e-commerce sales.
And more about driving immediate foot traffic.
More about driving immediate physical traffic. That makes perfect sense. The goal of the website isn't to ship things across the country. That's usually too complex for micro-fulfillment anyway.
The goal is to convince the person in the office building across the street to come in during their lunch break.
Right. And it's also about building community loyalty digitally. Running hyper-local promotions, maybe a discount code that's only active for people physically present within 500 meters of the store, that rewards immediacy. It encourages foot traffic over just digital browsing.
So it turns the high density of the urban environment, which is a problem, into a tactical advantage.
That's the whole game.
This is really where the actionable content lies then. The overall promise of a source like Urban Seller Strategies, therefore, is a repeatable model that's optimized for density by combining these three pillars: micro-specialization, operational velocity, and hyper-local digital integration.
It suggests there is a specific methodology, a framework that allows a resource-constrained business to successfully navigate the highest cost, highest competition landscape by turning their constraints, like their small size, into competitive edges.
So to wrap this up, we've really established the gravity of this source material and extracted the strategic framework it promises. The central takeaway for you, the listener, is that success demands strategies that are hyper-specialized, focused on agility, and optimized to combat high overhead and intense competition.
And that connection back to your need for quick, actionable knowledge is vital. You're not just reading general business theory here. You're looking for specific tactics to solve your toughest, most localized problems.
Whether that's how to manage inventory in a tiny space,
or how to draw customers off a crowded street using geofencing.
And that's the value of analyzing a source this closely. It ensures you know exactly what tools you need to be looking for to build and execute your own strategy.
And as a final provocative thought for you to consider, building on this theme of urban selling, we've discussed that the winning strategy relies heavily on leveraging local density. So, given the incredible speed of urban development, you know, neighborhood gentrification, new transit links, a sudden influx of a new demographic, how quickly must the independent seller be ready to pivot their core strategy?
Including their micro-specialization.
Including their micro-specialization to maintain relevance. Is the speed of adaptation the only constant urban strategy?
That's something for you to mull over or explore on your own as you navigate the city. Thank you for diving deep with us today.
Until next time.